Hey there, dog lovers! It's time to show your furry friend a little extra love and attention. After all, they're not just pets, they're family. At GetJoy, we provide top-of-the-line nutrition and wellness services to improve the lives of dogs and their families. GetJoy's dedicated team of animal science and vet nutritionists have expertly crafted their recipes to give your pup maximum health benefits. With options like gently cooked fresh meals, freeze-dried meals with pre, pro, and postbiotics for optimal gut health, and single-ingredient beef treats, your best friend just got upgraded to a whole new level of pampering. And the best part? GetJoy's meals are made with wholesome ingredients right here in the USA, with no fillers or artificial preservatives. Plus, when you subscribe to a GetJoy food plan, you'll be connected with a board-certified televet with services available 24/7. As a special offer to our listeners, visit getjoyfood.com and use the code PODCAST at checkout to get a 50% off your first order today. That's getjoyfood.com and use the code PODCAST at checkout to get 50% off your first order.
Being a baseball play-by-play broadcaster demands a blend of learned mechanics, intense preparation, and a calm sense of entertainment. How hard is it to do this job? Let's talk to the ones who do it. This is Matt Spiegel. My new podcast, The PBP, Voices of Baseball, will bring those conversations to you as the best working and former broadcasters tell you why and how they do it. New episodes come every Thursday all summer long. Follow The PBP, Voices of Baseball, on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We are off and running officially in the NFL preseason. I know it's the Hall of Fame game. It was a Thursday night, but DeMarcus Ware singing the national anthem, that was amazing. An actual flyover, the pomp and circumstance on NBC on a Thursday night, it sets us up for what is to come, even if you didn't recognize the vast majority of the athletes who were out there on the field. And maybe you didn't watch the entire time, but we did get some interviews with the Hall of Famers. That was really cool. And more like a home game there in Canton with the local Browns team playing on the weekend in which Joe Thomas will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
It was awesome. The atmosphere was incredible. A ton of Brownies fans, as we all knew, made the drive down. You know, we're so fortunate to get to play in this game, it being in our backyard. The Hall of Fame is incredible. So fortunate to be able to honor Joe Thomas and what he's meant to this team, this city, this community. So it was just a great night. Our guys love playing in this stadium under the lights. It takes you back to Friday Night Lights. So I thought the guys really enjoyed their time.
The voice of Kevin Stefanski post-game. I do not give preseason football scores. It's against my religion. Just know that one happened, and it happened in Canton. The lights went out. The showers didn't work, but it was football nonetheless. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Happy Almost Friday here on CBS Sports Radio. We'd love to connect with you on our Facebook page, or you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS. We are always excited to share our stage with another Night Owl, fellow Night Owl, and Jonathan Peterlin. He commandeers the airwaves for our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3 The Fan, from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. That's his weeknight slot. So he hands off to us here at CBS Sports Radio after that. And every now and then you'll hear him on the network. And we're pleased to talk to Jonathan now. So what was it like to see the Browns back on the football field, even if it was kind of fake football?
It was fake football for sure, but it was fun. It's good to see the Browns out there. I was upset though because Stefanski decided he wanted to basically play nobody, and it was like you knew before the game even got underway there wasn't going to be anybody that you could really judge or go off of. Now there were some things that were just fun as far as watching football is fun, like Dorian Thompson Robinson. That was great. Second half lit it up. Like that's enjoyable, but ultimately, there's none of the camp battles or any other fun juicy stuff. Really got helped or hurt tonight.
Even though we didn't get any questions answered, what would you say are the top questions for the Browns going into this preseason and ultimately the 23 campaign?
I mean, Deshaun's got to be the number one. Everything really revolves around that because everything revolves around the quarterback. But I wonder about this wide receiving core. I really do. Mike Clay's power rankings, putting the Browns 21st, I thought were wrong, but it has me a little messed up. Because I think Amari Cooper is good for 1,200 yards, somewhere in that range, more like 1,150 to 1,200, and 8-9 touchdowns. And after that, it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then what can you do with Elijah Moore, right? Can they turn Elijah Moore, can they turn the Jets trash into their own treasure. And that's got to be one of the big storylines in trying to figure this all out, because we know they got one of the best offensive lines. We know the Browns have one of the best running games in football. They now have a revamped defense. Like, there's a lot going on for the Browns. But the way the NFL is going, Amy, it looks like it's how good are your quarterbacks and wide receivers. And right now, like, if Deshaun Watson's a top 10 quarterback, like, if we assume everything goes great and he is that, well, how do you keep up with the Joneses that are the Bengals? You know, how do you keep up with Chase, Higgins, Boyd? And that's got to be one of the questions the Browns have.
Okay, well, I'm going to follow up on that then. How likely is it that Deshaun Watson is still a top 10 quarterback? What have you seen or heard coming out of Browns camp and even mini camp and OTAs?
So I'm hesitant on this one, even though I want to, and I tell people nightly, I'm like, you it's okay to believe in Deshaun Watson. It's all right. Jump, you know, head first if you want to. Last year, Amy, when he went to training camp, and I think what I'm hanging on is the idea that he had to wait 10 weeks then to go play at the Texans. But last year, I went and watched him play, because we did shows from them, you know, right, the way you do radio shows from training camp. It's just a thing we do. And I went and watched him, and so him next to Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett had a good year last year. At one point, they were top five in offensive rating. Like, he was good last year, and he looked like a high school kid next to Deshaun Watson. The throws were incredible that Deshaun could pull off, and it looked night and day. But then we watched him get on the field. He completed 58% of his passes. The Texans game, he had a bunch of warm burners, throwing balls in the dirt. Like, it wasn't pretty. So, like, there's a part of me that, even though we've seen a lot of really good stuff from the mini camps and the brief amount we have seen him here in Berea, because they were out in the Greenbrier in West Virginia for a week prior. But the brief amount we've seen, like, he looks really, really sharp. But then again, he looked really sharp last year, too.
We're excited to talk Browns football, or really just any football, with Jonathan Peterlin, who joins us from our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3 The Fan, is the host of Overtime with Jonathan Peterlin, and that airs 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. It's after hours on CBS Sports Radio. I want to ask another question about the offense, because the last couple of years, it's been the 1-2 punch of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. What happens without Hunt on the roster to back up Chubb, or to go 1-2 with Nick Chubb?
Yeah, it'll be Nick Chubb, and then it'll be Jerome Ford after that. But I think the difference here, so fantasy football, are you a fantasy football person, Amy, or no?
Oh, I won my championship last year.
Congratulations. All right. Glad to hear it. I'm not the biggest fantasy football person, but I love diving into, like, numbers and everything attached to the game. And with Nick Chubb, the way I see this playing out is that he's not going to have as many touches as maybe he did last year. I don't see that happening. When he was basically on a pitch count, they wouldn't put him anything more than like 20 attempts per game. I think it's going to be more like 15. But the difference here, this is for the fantasy football people out there, okay, so listen up. The difference here is, I think they're going to try to use Nick Chubb in the passing game more than they've ever used him. That's going to be the wrinkle to the Browns' offense, and how it looks completely different under Deshaun Watson is obviously the amount of passing attempts they have. I'm thinking closer like 35 to 40 a game, but the idea that Nick Chubb will be involved in the passing game, I don't know that Austin Eckler being rated ahead of him in the NFL top 100 is enough to make anyone mad in Berea, but, like, think Austin Eckler and then attach that to Nick Chubb, and that's what I'm going for this year.
Do you prefer it that way? Do you think the Browns will fare better without the power run game that has served them so well the last couple seasons?
I do a trade Nick Chubb conversation, or after next year, Nick Chubb's got to be gone, like, pay attention, and I'm telling you, it's doomsday for the fans. They don't want to hear it. Nick Chubb's a favorite. They love Nick Chubb.
Yes.
They love Nick. He's one of the best role models in the community, mixed with just good humans that you could find. And he's also, you know, one of the best running backs in the league. He's incredible. He's second in NFL in yards per attempt in NFL history, tied with Jim Brown. He's incredible. The hard part is that when it comes to Nick Chubb and it comes to this Browns offense, I want to see him utilized in his best way. I think we all know that. But I think his best way is what I talked about there. I think his best way is being able to catch as well as he can run and go from there. And I think that'll be best for the Browns.
Who are a couple of young players, maybe a couple of rookies, that people are really excited about with the Browns?
Really, it comes down to the third-round receivers. You know, Cedric Wilson, who they took this year, and then David right. Bell, who they took the year prior. He was a Big Ten receiver of the year in a conference at the time that had Olave and Wilson, right? So there's a lot attached to that. And I think between those guys and then between what they added defensively, and obviously not rookies, but new to the team, I think is getting people excited. Tom Winston, Za'Darius Smith. Like, Amy, we didn't have a first round pick.
Right.
You know, that was gone in the Deshaun Watson trade. So a lot of our hype has been attached to, really, in all reality, just guys we acquired in free agency.
I was actually going to bring that up and ask you, if you wouldn't mind, what was it like on draft night with no picks in the first couple rounds, and really on that Thursday night, having nothing specifically to Cleveland to look forward to?
I started in Cleveland in 2016. 2016 was a crazy year. That's when the Cavs won, the Guardians went to the World Series. Crazy year, right? And we talked so much. The Browns followed it up with a 1-31 stretch, as you remember, one of the worst teams in football.
Right.
And starting in October, you started talking about the draft. And I'm like, wait a second. We got a lot of really cool things to talk about that aren't the Browns. They're like, you're learning. It's a Browns town. You're going to learn. And so every October, we turn around and we just do 6 months of draft conversations. And you're like, this can't be real. How is this real? And so this last year, what was fascinating is that I didn't have to go like seven deep on left tackles. You know what I mean? Like, we got to like actually have just like normal sports conversations in February and March. And then leading up to the draft, we just kind of let it be what it was. I didn't pick up a draft guide this year. I didn't go deep into who's in the first round, mid first round or anything. Like, it was surprisingly really nice for a fan base that once treated the draft like it was their Super Bowl. We were really easy to just kind of like kick it to the curb this past year.
Okay. That's interesting, because I wasn't expecting that response with the way that the Browns missed the playoffs last year, but we'll get back to that. Jonathan Peterlin from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland joining us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. If you can, what does Joe Thomas mean to the Browns organization?
I mean, he's just the epitome of class. You know, he just represents everything you'd want in a football player. Not only just what he did on the field, which you can debate, and for a while some fans did debate whether or not they should have traded him at the end to Denver to try to get some value and try to get something out of him as far as what the future would then hold. But ultimately, the fact that he goes in as a Brown, only a Brown, mm-hmm. no other team can claim him. I think in retrospect, I'm happy the Browns didn't trade him to Denver, even though it would have been sweet for Joe to win a ring. I'm happy they didn't do that. Ultimately, he just, everything he does, he's always in the community. He's always down talking to people on the radio station, for instance. He's always there. He's available to people. He's available to Northeast Ohio. And he's just kept it a part of himself in a way that I don't think many athletes these days tend to do. He doesn't have to do the things that he does, but he constantly does. Joe is the epitome of class. There's no other way to put it.
Let's say there is a Mount Rushmore for Cleveland sports. We put Joe Thomas on that. Who else? Who else can compare with the realm of what Joe has meant to Cleveland sports?
LeBron, Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as the Indians/Guardians go, I think we could come up with like 12 different names, right? You could put Tomy on there. You could put Tito on there. It's like you got to have some representation there. Bob Feller. There's all sorts of guys you could like throw in there. I think if you started with LeBron, Jim Brown, and Joe Thomas, you're in a really good spot.
I love the way that he is so proud of being a Cleveland Brown, so proud of the fact that he played his entire career there, and so proud of the fact that he's a Brown.
It's a great place. Amy, have you been recently?
We've got to
get you down here.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a hidden gem. I've made a case before. I've done it on CBS Sports Radio, actually. I've done it on one of the weekend shows I did, that Cleveland in July is just as good as Las Vegas. We have every amenity that Vegas would need or want. It's just not 107 degrees. I'm telling you, it's a miraculous. I grew up in Chicago. So like people are like, you live in Cleveland. So you've never lived anywhere that's bigger than Cleveland, so you don't like it. I'm from Chicago. I genuinely think Cleveland is one of the best cities in the country. And I think it's a hidden gem. And every time I go on national and I tell people that, I always get all sorts of responses. You think they'd be like, oh, way to go, JP, you're in our corner. They're like, no, hush, hush, keep it for ourselves. We got to keep this our hidden gem. We got to keep this a secret. Stop telling people how great Cleveland is.
My first ever baseball game with my grandfather when I was 7 years old was in Cleveland. And I remember so fondly my summer spent with my grandparents in Northeast Ohio. So you do not have to sell me. Yeah, absolutely. That's where my mom's whole side of the family is from, the Youngstown area. So we spent a lot of time in Cleveland. Jonathan Peterlin is with us from the shores of Lake Erie here on CBS Sports Radio. What do you think of the AFC North? The Bengals right now, the team to beat, of course, because of what they've done the last couple years. But after the Bengals, or even in competition with the Bengals, how does it shake out?
It's really tough. If you told me, you know, you ever see on TikTok the little dogs that do they kick the balloons, the balls into the little baskets at the bottom of the stairs? That dog might have a better chance than I would right now telling you guys which direction it would go for the AFC North. It's you start with the Bengals at the top, and then you try to work your way down. But it wouldn't even really surprise me. As good as the Bengals are, and we're like this close to renaming it the Joe Burrow Patrick Mahomes Invitational for the AFC title game, like 1 year away from it. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Ravens won the division. Wouldn't surprise me if the Browns won the division. Wouldn't surprise me if any of those teams. Maybe the Steelers. Maybe the Steelers, I'd turn around and be like, wow, Kenny Pickett really got it together. But with Tomlin, who's ever to say that you got to count them out either? Right? For my money, it's the toughest division in sports right now. And I don't know that there'd be many – toughest division in NFL. Let me clarify that way. Mm-hmm. In NFL, and I don't know that many people would go back on that.
You really don't think it would be a surprise if Cleveland went from 7-10 to winning the AFC North?
Not at all. No. I can make a legit argument. And, like, we'll throw the Bills up there. We'll throw the 49ers up there. Like, the best 2-53 for my money with the additions the Browns have made, I would put the Browns right in that conversation. It all depends. If Deshaun Watson could be good. The hard part is, so like, I'm sure you saw Mike Sando's quarterback tears, right?
Right.
A lot of people in Cleveland, they loved it. They're like, oh, my gosh. Wow, Deshaun Watson's 11th. This is great. And I'm like, well, look at the list a little bit further. You have 7 quarterbacks in the AFC ahead of Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
And the top 5 on that list all live in the AFC. So like, there's a world where Deshaun Watson plays as a borderline top 10 quarterback, and it still means nothing because the AFC is just so loaded right now. And honestly, that's like my biggest fear, is that they finally get the quarterback. The Browns finally land the guy, and we're just in the greatest time for quarterbacking in AFC history.
Looking at the Browns' schedule, too, even as you were pointing that out, the first 4 teams on their regular season schedule all come from the AFC. In fact, they play every other team in the North in the first month before they host the 49ers. It is a doozy, Jonathan. What do you think?
Brutal schedule. There's one thing I like about it, though. Let me tell you what I like about it, even though it's not kind. Obviously, it's not kind. I like that the Bengals are week one for a couple reasons. So the Browns have beat Joe Burrow 5 out of the last 6 times. And I think there's something to that. But what I like about this the most is that the Browns with Jim Schwartz, new defensive coordinator, going to have a whole new mix-up, whole new everything for Joe Burrow. And with Deshaun Watson, let me say this, Amy. I think they held something back in the 6 games with Deshaun Watson. I'm all but convinced of it. And so I believe that Kevin Stefanski is going to unleash things the NFL has never seen with Deshaun Watson. And it's going to catch the Bengals by surprise because there's no film of what happened. So I think if you're going to take on what is, in my estimation, the second best team in the AFC, I think week one's a good time for it. And then week 18 is what it is. We got a nice gap in between there against the Bengals.
That's true. You can see him in week one and not see him again until the end of the regular season. All right, before I let you go, you mentioned Jim Brown on Mount Rushmore. It sounds like the franchise is planning to honor him. How much do you think that will matter this season? How much of an impact will it make to have him really kind of interwoven into everything they do?
I mean, the Browns just did a fan vote for what would happen at the midfield. The Brownie logo was up there, all these other things. And like a fan campaign started to put the number 32 there. It's not going to happen.
Wow.
But that kind of speaks to like the above and beyond nature that a lot of Browns fans want to go in honoring Jim Brown. I just don't know what else they can do, Amy. Like, they put him in the Ring of Honor. They gave him a statue amidst the 1-31 season because they wanted to bring some positivity to the franchise, even though some could argue that maybe isn't the right positivity in that moment, but that's a different story for a different time. And it's just like, I don't know, they ran out of things. So I think we're going to get probably the helmet decal. Maybe he'll have a tiny, tiny little 32 on there, but he is such an interesting athlete to talk about because he is a true reflection on some of our great athletes that we've had, where sometimes they're fantastic on the field and maybe sometimes less than fantastic off the field, but for some people that doesn't really matter the same way. And so it's a weird situation with Jim Brown, but ultimately there's just so many people that still remember when the Browns were on the top of the NFL world, and Jim Brown was a reason because of that.
He definitely is a one of a kind. There isn't anybody quite like Jim Brown. So we'll see how that is part of their season, their ebbs and flows this year. All right, Jonathan Peterlin, plenty to talk about. He's the host of Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. That starts 7 o'clock Eastern time in Cleveland. And he's even got me beat with 5 hours a night. I am glad that I just have four. You'll catch him every now and then on CBS Sports Radio as well. Jay Peterlin on Twitter. It's so good to talk to you. We look forward to doing it again. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Amy.
Good stuff. Some huge names that need to be upheld this season by the Cleveland Browns if they want to honor the year in which Joe Thomas goes into the Hall of Fame, if they want to truly represent the iconic Jim Brown who passed away recently, then this would be the year, right? This would be the year for them to go from worst to first. That's always a possibility, right? We know it happens almost every season in the NFL. Half the playoff field turns over every year in the NFL. That's the average. 7 new teams in, 7 teams out. And we'll play that game at some point during the preseason. But did you catch what Jonathan said? The AFC North is the toughest division in football. Do you believe that? What is the toughest division in football? Whether it's AFC, NFC, what is it? Jonathan says AFC North. And in fact, he initially said it was the toughest division in all of sports. That's definitely not the case. But let's go NFL. What is the toughest division in the NFL as currently constituted? On Twitter, After Hours CBS, producer Jay will put up a poll. Well, not a poll, but a post. A poll post. A posty poll. Also on our Facebook page. Look forward to hearing from you. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We are just a couple hours toward the weekend. Our weekend, maybe your weekend too if you're on our schedule. I actually just checked my bank account online at the top of the hour before we talked to Jonathan because it's also payday, but I lamented to producer Jay, the money is not there. And that does make me nervous because it was only a couple years ago. I don't think Jay and I were working together at the time. It was only a couple years ago that for some reason, half the paychecks from the company did not get deposited. The direct deposit didn't work. Were you part of that?
I actually did get mine.
You got yours.
Yeah,
okay.
I do remember that though, yeah.
Remember that Lawrence Holmes, one of our friends in Chicago for AM 670 The Score, he did not get paid. So when I was talking about it on the air and then posting about it on Twitter, he responded with a DM. Hey, I didn't get paid either. What do you think's going on? So I do get a little nervous when I check and there's no paycheck. There's no direct deposit, but we'll give it a little more time. A girl's got to eat.
4 Eastern, I think.
My refrigerator is empty except for condiments. And some blackberry wine that a friend gave me in Syracuse. And I'm trying to think what else. Oh, a little bit of almond milk left. A Brita water filter. That's pretty much it. There is almost nothing, as in almost nothing, in my refrigerator. Because I thought, oh, I'll get back and I'll go to the grocery store one morning on my way home from work. And it's just been a tough transition back to the overnight schedule. So help us get to the weekend more quickly. Just kidding. Time passes at the same speed. But we'd love to hear from you. What is the toughest division in football? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Etch your name in the history books. Taurasi, 3. Diana's done it. She is 1 of 1. Taurasi is now the league's first 10,000 point scorer career.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Congratulations to longtime UConn and WNBA great Diana Taurasi. Taurasi, I can't believe I called her that. I was thinking about the word career, and so I said, you know, how it happens in my brain. Can we strike that from the record? Let me try that again. Don't even think about the word career, Amy. She's the WNBA's first 10,000-point scorer, Diana Taurasi. And I had the privilege of calling a few games when Hartford played against UConn back in the day when she was still part of that Hartford slash Stores contingent. And, of course, a longtime star for the Phoenix Mercury. No one's ever done it. She's the first one to pour in 10,000 points as a member of that pro league. And if you haven't seen the highlight, it's totally and utterly Diana. There's a screen from about, I don't know, just inside 30 feet from a corner. And the ball is, it almost feels like it, at least the angle that I was looking at, it looked like she was shooting it from behind the backboard, like the corner angle that she took. And yet that's her. She's got all kinds of moxie and boldness and never met a shot that she couldn't hit, nor did she ever meet a shot that she didn't like. She really could be different body type, but really could be, in terms of that mentality, the Steph Curry of the WNBA. And so she was 18 points shy when she started the game on Thursday evening, had 10 at halftime, was driving to the hoop to start the second half. And so she was all about attacking this record and had back-to-back threes to reach 10,000. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Good to hear from her afterwards. Says she'll actually take the time to celebrate this particular record.
It's going to be a nice one. It's going to be a grown-up dinner at a nice restaurant with my closest friends that have been with me for a long time. And, you know, I usually don't let myself enjoy these moments, but tonight, because there were so many people in the building that have really helped me through all this, and I think that gets lost sometimes when one person gets, you know, a lot of awards, a lot of attention, whatever it may be. You know, you don't go far in life without really good people in your corner. And I've just been so lucky and grateful to have my family, for one, and friends that are our family now that have been in my corner since day one. And, you know, that was really special tonight.
The numbers are they're off the charts for Taurasi. She has been in the WNBA now for 19 years. This is her 19th season. We mentioned the 10,000 points. She also has 1,344 triples. There's only one other player in league history with at least 1,000 threes, and that's Sue Bird, of course, who she knows well. They shared a backcourt for a while at UConn. And this is a Hall of Fame career, right? Because she's already the league's all-time leading scorer. She's someone who, even at her age, okay, so I hate to point it out, but she is an older player, right? She's 41 years old, and she finishes the game with 42 points. I mean, she's still a juggernaut when it comes to scoring when she wants to be. So oldest player in WNBA history with a 40-point game. There's a lot to celebrate and obviously a long and storied journey, a winding journey, and she wouldn't change a thing.
I wouldn't change a thing.
I said that. No, you know, I said that.
Every moment led to another moment, led to another moment, you know, throughout this journey that, you know, started way before the WNBA, way before UConn. It started in my driveway. It really did. It was just innocent. It was naive. There was no goal. There was no plan. There was no speaking English. It was just a kid who liked to play basketball in her front yard, and everyone was welcome to come and play. You know, and sometimes you forget that it's supposed to be fun. And, you know, as the years have gone by, I have to keep reminding myself that, you know, when you do something you love, it's not a job, it's not work. It's just your passion.
I love that. And I love that her parents were with her. And there were many others that were have been part of her journey, that were part of her getting to this point, who were in the building. They obviously stopped the game. Her her back-to-back triples. Again, they just represent who she is. Ready, aim, fire is Diana Taurasi. She always has been. She's bold. She's brash at times. I mean, she'll talk trash with the best of them. She can be in your face. I mean, she's got that same fire that, say, a Draymond Green does, though she's not quite the same troublemaker. But she does not back down from a fight. And so the triple that I saw that kind of got her closer to this moment, it was from behind the backboard. She catches and shoots the last three that she needed from the right wing. It just, it's so automatic. It's not, in her case, anything that requires thought. She just catches and fires. And that's what I mean about Steph Curry. From anywhere on the court, Diana Taurasi can be money. And to now have that 10,000 point plateau all to herself, there's nobody else in the WNBA who really is close. And her parents were out there on the court with her. She's really tight with her mom and her dad. And I love what she had to say about her parents after the fact.
There's something to be said when you know, you're an immigrant and you come to this country with nothing. I think that is the story of this country. And my parents, you know, symbolize that in so many ways. You know, they came here with nothing. Didn't know the language. I mean, they still don't know English. If you try to talk to them, they will talk to you in circles. And, you know, I kind of grew up in a different type of family atmosphere, and that's what's made me. It was always dinner at 8 every night, our family, our Aww. Unit, and that's how I treat my teams. It's our unit, our family, and that's really what has carried me through all these years in the WNBA, overseas, Olympic team, UConn, SoCal women's basketball, you know, all the teams that really are my family.
It's interesting to hear her talk about her family structure, right? Because how many people could say that? Now, she's into her 40s, but it's clear that her parents and the way they brought her up and their story is very much a part of her story, and dinner at 8 every night. And so that structure, the way that she runs her team, I mean, obviously, like Sue Bird, who just retired, this is a player that a lot of these young women who are in the league now grew up watching. It's a little bit like the Tom Brady component with the Patriots or the Buccaneers, and later in his career, how many other players would get drafted into the league and would say, oh my gosh, I'm playing with Tom Brady. I mean, I grew up watching this guy. Well, that's what it's like with Diana Taurasi. I mean, she's no doubter for the Hall of Fame, and she's considered by many to be the greatest of all time in the women's basketball realm. And so WNBA fans have already voted her as the GOAT, even in this era of recency bias, where we're kind of more about what have you done for me lately. And the Phoenix Mercury are having a tough season. So to get this in a win was significant as well. But yeah, this is someone that will look back and say, okay, I'm really glad I got to watch her play when she did, got to see her career unfold. And as I say, it was kind of cool to be able to call a game that Diana Taurasi was a part of back when I was doing Hartford women's play-by-play. So speaking of GOATs, we asked Marco Belletti that he would contemplate, you consider seriously this oh-so-serious question, sober, somber question, of whether or not you will miss Tom Brady on the football field in 2023.
No, and make me miss you, Tom. Go away.
Because Is that I feel how you like, feel about the Mannings? Because they haven't gone away.
Yeah, I feel like it's different. Peyton Manning, I don't know. There's a different vibe that I get from Peyton Manning and that I do from Tom Brady. I feel like Tom Brady is dying for your attention. I feel like Peyton Manning is just there. And if you happen to pay attention, so be it. It's a different vibe that I get. And Eli is just, you know, doing whatever Eli does. That's totally different.
Well, we never saw this side of Eli when he played. So he's like a whole new person.
Yes and no. I mean, you got a very few, but you got little snippets here and there of the goofy personality from Eli. If you like peeled it back, he just didn't show it to you because he didn't want to be bothered by it. Basically, he didn't want to be distracted by any of the extra conversation because there was enough going on. But he had all this. I mean, there was plenty of talk about, you know, his teammates used to say all the time, like, he was the biggest prankster in the locker room. Just he didn't want you to know that.
No, we didn't know that.
Yeah, that was the part that was a little different. I feel like Tom Brady, it's every 2 seconds. There's always something that he has to, let us know about. Something I bought, something I did, something I went, something I wore. Like, Tom, go away for 5 minutes. Can you please? Like, can you make me miss you? Okay? Because that, I, you know, maybe I want to miss you, but right now I don't.
No. All right. Eli, did you get invited to be on his podcast? Well, no. Right? Probably not.
He's never invited me to anything.
Well, clearly, if you are Tom Brady, you have more love for Peyton than you do for Eli.
No doubt.
And it's obviously not just Eli, but the Giants beating the Patriots in those two Super Bowls where he often says, and this is probably pre-Eagles beating them, but he's often said that he stews more over the two losses to the Giants than he does think about and celebrate the wins.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you, I don't even know if you would say in a sober moment, like I don't know if you would, he would even probably volunteer this. He would probably give back a couple of Super Bowls to take to get the 07 one.
Yep.
To finish off the perfect season. I'm sure he would say, you know what? I would have been good with five as long as we would have got that one. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm overstepping here. I think it's pretty obvious that that's the one that he would want back. The other ones, you sure? Yeah, that one. That's the one. Finishing that off.
He was pretty salty over the Eagles loss too.
And understandable. Look, anytime you lose, never mind losing a Super Bowl, I get it, and he's a competitive guy. But no one's ever done 19-0, and no one still has done 19-0. Right. That's the part that I'm sure that eats away at every single one of them, and Tom Brady, top of the list.
Well, now it would be 20-0, right? Because,
right.
Well, depending upon whether or not you're a bye, blah, 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 but you've got
the
17
games. Well, you're going to have a bye. If you're going to be 17-0, you're going to
have a bye. Yeah. That's true. Good point. Thank you. No more words needed to be said. You're right. Thank you. It is the middle of the night Eastern time. And so I just, duh. Yes, thank you. Duh.
No, and that's the thing. And we have seen a perfect season. Season was shorter. That's why the Dolphins, it's 17-0. So anytime, and then we're going to add to this. And sooner or later, it's going to be 18 games. Right, so if somebody ever gets the 17, then you'd have to add an 18. So I get it. But the idea that it was there and it was at your fingertips and it was a couple minutes away, weren't able to finish it off. That's the one that eats away at Tom Brady. Mm.
Just speaking of that Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl where he's upset about that one, I thought I remembered this correctly. Yeah, he threw for 505 yards in that game and they lost. So that's probably why he's a little ticked off.
Although, you know what? He ends up getting credit for the Buccaneers Super Bowl, even though it was the defense that just run roughshod over their opponents during that run. Remember, he had the game in the NFC Championship at Green Bay in which he threw three interceptions in the second half, but the Packers could do nothing with it.
Yep.
So it was really the defense that set the tone for that 2020 Super Bowl win. So you take some, you give some back. It's a team sport, to be sure. All right, so the poll is still up for a couple more minutes. You can find it on Twitter, After Hours CBS, and also, what is the toughest division in the NFL? Jonathan Peterlin says it's the AFC North. I'm not sure I agree, so that post is on Twitter or Facebook.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I think, as always, the thing that's going to worry you is the hype train. I mean, as with most coaches, you know, this thing is just taking off and it's out of control right now. And that's fine as long as we stay focused on the job at hand and the work. I just keep going back to that. We got to put the work in and earn it.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The hype train, baby. It's about the hype train. Man, Dan Campbell, he is now right there on par with Mike Tomlin when it comes to coaches and their one-liners. We could call them Campbellisms. Actually, that rolls off the tongue a little easier than Tomlinisms. Campbellisms. Campbellisms. Uh-huh. Not cannibalism. Yeah. Not that. Let's not mistake it for that. But we love us some Dan Campbell, and we can't wait to start incorporating our favorite coaches and even players, some of our players that we enjoy hearing from. It's after
and on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off.
I mean,
maybe it is cannibalism.
He is as interesting and colorful as Jared Goff is boring, right? I mean,
yes.
And I don't mean on the football field. I mean in front of a microphone, right? So you've got this quarterback who's relatively monotone. Not that he doesn't care. I'm not at all suggesting that. But that he's relatively monotone and kind of uninteresting. Not a whole lot of bulletin board material or anything that makes headlines or clickbait for Jared Goff. But you have a coach who can't stay away from the quotables and the clickbait.
I swear to God, I'm not a lunatic.
The hype train, he calls it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Except, even as Dan Campbell points to other people and the hype train, the man is hyped for practice. We talking about practice. He is hyped for practice. That's what's got him all juiced up right now.
Like, I can't wait for the Giants next week. I mean, Jacksonville's going to be great, too. But, you know, and that's going to be honest and a heart. I love it because from an offensive standpoint, like, Martindale's going to give us everything we can handle. We're going to get every look you could possibly imagine. It's going to be chaotic. Guys are going to be, their head's going to be spinning. Which it's our job to calm them down, but it's just going to be unbelievable. And it's different talent. It's a different look at different talent that they haven't seen. You know, they've been going against their own guys. So, man, it's going to be unbelievable.
He's talking about practice. He's talking about joint practice, and yet he is fired up. And he mentions Martindale, Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator for the New York Giants. But no, seriously, for fun, can we hear it again? Like, I can't wait. He starts it with a like. That's my favorite part. As if he's some millennial or Gen Zer. Like, I can't wait.
Like, I can't wait for the Giants next week. I mean, Jacksonville's going to be great, too.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
You know? And that's going to be honest and a heart. I love it because from an offensive standpoint, like, Martindale's going to give us everything we can handle. We're going to get every look you could possibly imagine. It's going to be chaotic. Guys are going to be, their head's going to be spinning, which is our job to calm them down. But it's just going to be unbelievable. And it's different talent. It's a different look at different talent that they haven't seen. You know, they've been going against their own guys. So, man, it's going to be unbelievable.
First of all, how many guys have spinning heads over practice? I know these joint practices can be controversial. Not every coach and player likes them. Big Belichick, big fan of joint practices because he wants that extra intensity. But how often do fights break out and then the two teams end up canceling the rest of their joint practices? Dan Campbell, heads are spinning.
Now, we ain't talking about the game.
We talking about practice.
We talking about practice,
not
man.
Not a game. We talking about practice. Oh, good stuff. Anytime we can drop a little AI. No, not that AI. The original AI. The GOAT. The OG. He's the AI OG. Right?
I'd say so.
Yeah, I feel like AI stole from AI. Maybe AI is mimicking AI.
That's what it does.
He's the OG AI. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.